You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
We have a certified Radio 1 legend in the house. We have Anthony Deaker, who's come all the way from the faraway lands of the DCC. Morena, my friend, how you doing?
G'day, Zach. Great to be here.
No, it's good to have you here. It's good to have you. I read a brief biography that you sent to one of the higher-ups at OUSA about your time here, and it's pretty extensive. You've done a bit of everything.
At Radio 1, yeah. Yeah,
and in general, but at Radio 1, yeah, for sure. I mean, you were part of the OUSA exec in 87 and 88, where you were invited to do a grave shift show in the weekend, and that's how you kind of started your way here. Had you thought of joining the station before that happened?
I was an avid listener and loved it to bits. It started going to gigs in 1986 around town, and really this was the place to find out about live music and the cool bands. And so I was definitely in the Radio 1 wavelength at that time. And OUSA, as the owners of Radio 1, were trusted to come in and look after the baby all night long. And so I started doing late night shows with friends, and that was so much fun. That got a real buzz, and that sort of led into then also supporting the Radio 1 talkback show, which was a cultural phenomena at the time.
It was indeed. As a talkback host, what was the ratio of like punters to serious, you know, people?
It was very low. It was very low.
I'm not surprised.
A lot of the callers were I think they were high school kids doing their favourite wrestlers, you know, like Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan impersonations.
Are any Ric Flair in there?
Bit of Ric Flair.
Oh.
And they'd say but it was fun. It was just so loose. And there was a guy called Michael Tull. He was the right-wing guy, and I was the left-wing guy. It was a sort of a classic setup for arguments.
William F. Buckley versus Gore Vidal on Radio 1.
Yeah. People used to call the station back on Monday morning and go, OMG, what was that? It was so loose and funny.
Nice, nice. I wish we still had something like that, but I think we've changed a little bit.
It was a bit risky.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
There was a delay, but I was never sure how to really hook it up.
You said you were a talkback host. You're also a news editor and station manager here, in that order, from the late 80s to early 90s. What position did you enjoy the most?
Really, really enjoyed the news editor role. At the time we came in, I think it was a new role. You know, announcers would read the ODT, and we had teletext on a TV screen, and so it was pretty dry. We were starting from a low base to add a lot of different content and variety. Around that time, I think the internet was cranking up. This is the early 90s, and you could go across to the computer science building at university and get on chat rooms. And we started to pull in, we tried to diversify the sort of the type of news you could hear anywhere else, which was very, as it still is really, Eurocentric and American.
Yes, very Western, the Western world.
Yeah, yeah.
Quote unquote.
So we had regular news bulletins from Latin America and Africa and the Pacific.
And Asia as well, I believe.
Yeah. You had to subscribe to magazines, or you had to find chat rooms or whatever to get that content. We did a whole lot of other stuff. We started talk shows in the middle of the morning and had a regular arts show. And I was still involved in OUSA, so we tried to really get a strong flavour of university and student news coming through. It was good fun.
Yeah, I bet, man. And using chat rooms at the science department, that's pretty insane. What were some of those chat rooms like? What were the names of them? And also, how could you be sure what people were saying was correct?
I know, this is so fascinating. It's recently been identified that that is really some of the those chat rooms were really where this current wave of conspiracy theorist rabbit hole stuff started. You know, it was this whole new space where people just they were little echo chambers. Visually, that's what I remember the most, was that it was old school font and that sort of weird neon green.
Yeah, Matrix kind of vibe.
Yeah, very Matrix vibe. The content, you just had to sort of dig around and try and cross-reference some of it.
Yeah.
But I was never 100% sure that it was was all accurate, but it didn't really matter too much.
Do you think this gave you a competitive advantage against the critic or the ODT?
I don't know. It was we didn't have extensive news bulletins, but we did try and mix it up a lot with unusual and fresh content. I used to subscribe to all the anarchist magazines as well, and they covered stuff that weren't covered anywhere else.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, that's awesome. It's a good, you know, depth of information and a good plurality of voices.
Yeah.
I think is what the R1 News definitely does, still to this day. I read an NZ Herald profile about you, and you've done a bit of everything, including sculpting, writing, artist mentoring, festival organising, as well as serving as an arts and culture advisor for the DCC. What is the biggest kind of through line in your mahi there?
There was a really... there was a significant event, and I've talked about it a couple of times. It was life changing for me. There was it was being here at the station and being the station being the hub of lots of band interviews and bands hanging out and bands bringing up their music. Those people just became my friends and spent a lot of time from that background at OUSA. Then really immersing myself in the arts community. Communities in Dunedin, and I remember this gig at Super 8, which was this great venue, dodgy as in Cumberland Street, the Farewell to Welfare gig, and it feels sort of like the political wheel has come full circle with a retrenching national government cutting everything, and they cut welfare benefits massively. At that time, there was high unemployment in Dunedin, and a lot of it were the artists and musicians. And the Farewell to Welfare gig was just one of those things when, oh my God, I could do that. You know, it was a real... It shifted my thinking about creativity. And from there, kept on going and wanting to organise in the arts community. And from that, there is a line of sight there through organising venues like Super 8. Super 8 moved up to Moray Place. And another momentous night was the night sort of techno arrived in Dunedin. We hosted this rave with DJs from Golden Bay. They all came down with treats for everybody and fluoro banners. And the people that were there in the morning, Dunedin was still very grungy rock and roll. This must have been 1994 or 95 or something, and the hippies came from from Golden Bay with techno, and everyone that was there in the morning sort of looked at each other, and that was the beginning of this new set of friendships as well. And we went from there to start organising dance party and rave, and it's so cool to see how awesome the Winter Solstice dance parties still are.
Yeah, they've carried on.
Yeah. And so we were the first techno crew at the end of what had been a punk tradition. All the hardcore Seacliff punks were organising their big scary rock and roll parties out at Seacliff. And they were sort of in decline as the techno hippies were coming up. And it's amazing that little moment in time has morphed and carried on. I've got off the original track of your question there. Sorry, but the through line of my career has really been around creativity. You know, that what can we do? And it's where Radio 1 sits very proudly in the city is, you know, what can we do to enable and keep on broadening everyone's minds? But to do that, we need to uphold artists and give money to their work and help them succeed in their careers. And that's been a large part of my work professionally was as an artist mentor and an advocate. Helped set up a thing called PACE, which mentored artists, and that sort of led into the work I'm doing now at Council.
Is that still existing?
No, Helen Clark government started it in 2001, and then National eventually cut it after that version of the Labor government. A version came back under the Jacinda Ardern government, but it wasn't quite the same. Things have got a lot better, but still much more work to do.
For sure. It's funny you mentioned that about techno coming up, because I had Wallace Chapman on the program earlier in the week.
Who, yeah, cool.
Used to
was
be
one of the alumni. Yeah, yeah.
Directors. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he remembers when old Underworld's Dub No Bass with My Headman came out, and he saw it in the disc catalog here, and the disc cupboards, and someone at the station told him not to play that because that's not what Radio 1 sounds like.
that's kind of right.
Old guard is
it was
yeah,
that was a thing
with the tunes.
Yeah, there's no guitars in there. That's not going to work.
Yeah, which is so short-sighted.
Yeah.
Oh man.
We had a moment when I was in the station when then the Nirvana album came out, and Nevermind was just poof. Oh, yeah. It smells like Teen Spirit. That was one of those sort of epic moments of cultural shift as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm not surprised. Not surprised at all. I don't think we have a lot of time left for our corridor here, but I want to know if you have any New Zealand music picks for 2024, and if you still keep up with the tunes.
Oh, I love going to gigs. It's so great to go to spaces like yours, and they sort of take me back to the Super 8 spaces. They were rough and a bit crap, but awesome, and the vibe is amazing. And what strikes me is that everyone's happy and smiling.
Yeah.
It was sort of like back in the day, it wasn't quite like you couldn't really go to music without guitars. You couldn't really go to a gig and smile.
Or without going to a gig pissed.
Or getting passive lung cancer.
Yeah.
Love Dale Kerrigan.
Mm-hmm.
Got a shout out to Hoha.
Mm-hmm. Big shout out to Hoha.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Playing tomorrow.
Children's Letters to God.
Yeah.
So great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing Futurians again tonight. Haven't
yes.
seen them.
You're going to come down
years.
To the. Yeah. Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be real fun. You've actually requested a really, really awesome song here. It's Peter Jeffries and Robbie Muir?
Muir. Yeah.
There you go, Muir. With The Fate of the Human Carbine. When did this track come out?
Oh, look, that was the other thing that was big at the time was Expressway. When I was in the station, Expressway was running hot. Mm-hmm. Cassettes and singles. This must have come out around 93 or 94 as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's local Dunedin guys? Or
yeah, Peter Jeffries was living in Dunedin at the time, and Robbie Muir was from here.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. And that was pretty high rotation for you?
Yeah, still is.
Yeah,
awesome. My kids are sick of it.
Not surprised. That was like me with Amy Winehouse, because my dad got an Amy Winehouse Greatest Hits CD, and he wouldn't stop playing it.
Yeah,
and
loved
it to bits.
Classic.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for coming on the program today, Anthony. It was great chatting with you.
Thanks for having me, Zach.
Of course. All right, folks, that was Anthony Deaker, a Radio 1 legend, talking about his time here at The One. We have Dave Borrow coming on very shortly at 10:30 to do a similar thing. It's going to be great. Here is Peter Jeffries with The Fate of the Human Carbine. You're listening to The One. Keep it locked.
Of money all the time, doing it to annoy her. She's on his conscience day and night.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.